four 30-minute speeches. Brother Guy and Woods.
Brother moderators from the Cardinal, ladies and gentlemen. Again, I'm happy that in the good providence of God that we've been brought safely to this moment and are now privileged to engage in this study. In order to conserve time, I shall waive the reading or further definition of the proposition in view of the fact that on last evening I did that in detail and Brother Cogdell found nothing to object to the definition. It is simply my obligation to show that the scriptures teach that such a program as that conducted by the Highland Elders in Abilene, Texas, that we know as the Herald of Truth is scriptural in its nature, that it's authorized by the Word of God. That's my obligation, and to that end, I shall now address myself. I shall have, first of all, on the chart, or on the screen, chart number 67. May we have the lights out, please. This is a chart on the Great Commission. Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 to 20. Go teach all nations, baptizing them into the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Or, as it's put by Mark in Mark 16, 15, and 16, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. He that believeth not shall be damned. May I call your attention to the fact that this is a worldwide obligation. That is addressed to the apostles and by them passed on to us, that it involves a church responsibility. Paul said to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 2, the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou unto faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. This is an obligation that bids us to go to every nation on earth. And secondly, having gone to every nation on earth, then to every city in every nation on earth. And then to contact every person in every city in every nation on earth. Then in addition to that, of course, the towns and villages and the rural areas until every person has been reached. I submit that that's a worldwide obligation. It is an obligation that rests upon the church. I maintain that in the nature of the case, there is cooperation involved, that no one congregation is able to discharge the obligation that this sets up, and that it implies and necessitates cooperation in New Testament churches. Now we shall see that such is indeed in harmony with New Testament teaching. Chart number 67-8. Here, friends, is exactly what is being done and what the Great Commission requires. The obligation is set forth by the Commission, which we just presented. Matthew 28-15, Mark 16-15-16. The churches of Christ, and these are the congregations. It's an instrument that by the gospel is carried in the discharge of responsibility in cooperation with one of its sister congregations in the discharge of the obligation. Actually, the essence of this issue is this: the New Testament congregation makes the gospel in a cooperative way when one of the cooperating congregations takes care of the essential detail. That's the issue. In this instance, the congregation that takes care of the details is the Highland Church. Now let's note that there is no exclusive pattern of cooperation taught in the New Testament. So, chart 69. This will show us that Brother Cogdell's alleged pattern does not exist. He maintains it does, but we shall see there is no such. No. Types of cooperation. Is there an exclusive pattern? Well, you decide. We have an example of cooperation between individuals, 2 Timothy 4 and 9. We have an example of one individual and several other individuals, Romans 16, 1 and 2. The case of Lydia. In the case of Phoebe, it is. We have here in the case of a Christian family, 1 Corinthians 16 and 15, the household of Stephanus. We have next here disciples and elders, Acts 11, 27 to 30. We have an instance of cooperation involved in the churches helping needy saints in Jerusalem in the great contribution of 2 Corinthians 8 and 9. We have an example of a church and a church cooperating in Acts 15, chapters 1, verse 32, when the church in Jerusalem sent out letters to congregations in Cilicia and Syria and other areas. All right, now, that shows us there is no exclusive pattern. To make a law where God made none is as guilty, or is as wrong, and God regards it as guilty, as one who presumes to break a law that he already has. It's just as wrong to make laws as it is to break them. In fact, through the centuries, God has looked with greater severity on those who presume to make laws than he has upon those who break them, because sometimes they're extenuating circumstances. In the case of those who break them, but in the instance of those who make them, there is a presumption and an officious intermeddling with the will of God. There is no exclusive pattern. Let's have now charts number 66. Observe, please, our proof of the proposition. There is a church obligation to preach the gospel. We've established that a number of times. That obligation is set out in the Great Commission. And we see in 1 Timothy 3 and 15 that the church is the pillar and ground or support of the truth. This obligation allows expediency in means and method. Speaking, writing, tracts, radio, TV, and so forth. That's involved in the generic command to teach, as set out in the commission and in the instance given. Number 3, the church may undertake a work larger than it can support, and it may be assisted by sister congregations. We have an example of this in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9. Now let's just pull this chart out for the moment. Let me give you an example of that very thing right there, chart 56. We have here the Macedonian Jerusalem cooperation period. Note this now. Here is Philippi. Here is Philippi, Thessalonica, and Berea. These are merely representative. They're one of the congregations. Here was the total need. This was Jerusalem's ability without assistance. These congregations recognized that there was a need greater than Jerusalem could meet. Hence, they came to Jerusalem's aid. Their portion, together with what Jerusalem did, constituted the whole of it. That is exactly, in principle, what we're doing through the medium of such programs as the Hill Crew. All right, now, let's have a chart. Yes, back again. Now we're down to this point. We've shown here that one church may undertake a work larger than it can support and may be assisted by sister congregations. We've seen that demonstrated in the case of the Jerusalem Macedonian cooperation effort. Now note here. Thus, one church may send assistance to another church in the form of preaching. 2 Corinthians 11:8. Paul said, then he robbed other churches, taking wages of it. Acts 11:22-24, an example of where one church sent a preacher to another church. Benevolence, Acts 11:27-30, where the disciples sent aid to the brethren in Judea. In 2 Corinthians 8:1-15, the case that we've just alluded to, that is in the chart 56. Now, this assistance may consist of food, money, clothing, and a preacher. 2 Corinthians 11:8 may consist of tracts or writing of the New Testament. Acts 15:22-32. Now that, friends, constitutes the essential requirements of my proposition. Let's have now it reduced to logical and syllogistic form. Number 54. Here is the major premise of the proposition. All total situations, the component parts of which are scriptural, are total situations which are scriptural. The minor premise, the total situation described in my proposition, is a total situation, the component parts of which are scriptural. Therefore, the irresistible conclusion, the total situation described in my proposition, is a total situation which is scriptural. If that's not true, it's either because the proposition is invalid, or the premise is false. But the major premise is axiomatic. No one can question the major premise. I have established the minor premise, point by point, in the proof that I've just given. Since the premises are true, since the proposition is valid, then the conclusion is irresistible. that the total situation which I am defending is a total situation that is scriptural in its nature. Now, that, friends, establishes this proposition. It does seem that Brother Cogdell would make some effort to reply to it. The only thing he said last night was that, well, you can take 2 quarts of water and 2 quarts of alcohol, you don't have 4 quarts. Well, nobody said you did, but you have the total of all that's there. You put the two together and it makes the whole of it, whatever it is. Well, all right, you take all items of, all scriptural items of a situation and put them together and you've got a total scriptural situation. Now, I insist that some answer must be made to that. Or else these brethren ought to quit preaching on the plan of salvation. They ought to quit preaching on the items of worship. They ought to quit preaching on the identity of the church. And that, friends, is true, and that establishes this proposition of world without end. It'll take more than laughing to get rid of it, Brother Cogdell. It will indeed. Now then, let's have chart number 70. Let me know when I have at least 10 minutes. Brother Cogdell insists that there is something between the church and the Highland congregation. He said last night there was an organization in there comparable to the Missionary Society between the Highland church and the contributing churches. Now let me call your attention to this fact, please. That when he was with the North Hill congregation, in the meeting that was conducted down there, 20 congregations participated. Brother Cogdell has said that he no longer endorses that. But let me call your attention to this fact. When he wrote the introduction to God's prophetic word, he said the arrangement was such that it would not provoke criticism. Why did he do it that way? So it wouldn't provoke criticism. Well, what was the way? Same way that it's done here. Exactly. Because he had to repudiate this in order to be able to oppose this. Therefore, according to Brother Cogdell, there wasn't anybody objecting to this situation back there when the North Hill meeting was held, because it was arranged in a way not to provoke criticism. All right, let's have chart number 71. Brother Cogdell says that there's an exclusive pattern. That pattern consists of, in benevolence, of sending the money to the church, and in the case of evangelism, to send the money to the preacher. Now then, if that be true, if you cannot send the money, but must send the preacher, you must send the same thing. And because the New Testament mentions that they sent a preacher, that therefore you must send the preacher, and you cannot send the money, then it would mean in benevolence that you've got to send the same thing that they sent. But he admits that that's money in that case, but he doesn't say they send groceries. Now then, Brother Cogdell, could they send groceries? Could they send groceries? I insist you answer that. If you say yes, then where's your pattern? If you say that they can send groceries, I insist that your pattern says they sent money. Now answer, can they send groceries? Do you think he'll answer that? You wait and see if he does. Let's have number 65. But now first, I'm not through with that other one there. I want that one back there. Number 71. Let's have that. I want to deal with that just a little bit more. Here now, friends, this is Brother Cogdell's contention, that in the matter of evangelism, the money must be sent to the preacher, can be sent to the church. That in the matter of benevolence, it must be sent to the church. That's the exclusive pattern. We'll see in the next chart that that's what he says. But now here's what I want to know. Brother Cogdell, if these brethren out of Highland were to take this program out from under the oversight of the elders of the Highland Church and put it under the oversight of E.R. Hopper, would you endorse it? And I tried repeatedly at Birmingham to get him to answer that question. He was as dumb as an oyster and as silent as the grave. He'll be that here tonight. Now I wish some of you brethren would tell Brother Cogdell how to answer that question. I want to know if it would be right to put this program under the oversight of a preacher and conducted in the same way. He doesn't believe it would, yet he argues. That's the pattern. Now, Brother Cogdell, will it be right? If it would not be right, why wouldn't it? Tell us why it would. Now let's have chart number 65. Brother Cogdell claims that he's been misrepresented. when we say that he believes that he would be wrong, that his position leads logically to the position that it would be sinful for one church to send another church a New Testament. Now here's what he said in the Congress Woods debate, page 307. This is an exact quote. Talk about an exclusive pattern? Yes. There's an exclusive pattern. When the need was benevolence, they sent it to the elders. When the need was evangelism, they sent it to the preacher. Now what is that? That's an exclusive pattern. All right now. If the pattern in evangelism is exclusive, and this is it, then you couldn't send a New Testament to a church. If you can, then it's not the pattern. If you can't, then why didn't he say so? Now, brethren, it seems to me that after three or four nights, the time has come to make some specific answers to these questions. And these people are going to wonder, why it is you don't? They're going to think that you can't. Now, you either can or you can't, Brother Cogdell. Get busy and answer that. Is it right for one church to send a New Testament to another church? You answer that. Will you answer? Nod your head. You don't have to speak. No, you don't intend to answer it because you can't even stay in this debate. I just challenge you to answer the question. Oh, no, Cogdell, you're not going to answer it. Now let me show you, friends, what his position leads to. How much time do I have? Number 72. All right, fine. Now look, please. Cogdell closes doors of cooperation. Look what his position requires him to do. Meetings like Nor Hill, of course, he's repudiated that. Yet he said that it was arranged in such a fashion that 20 churches cooperated in a scriptural manner without any organization. Now, there wasn't any organization back then. Well, the Herald of Truth is conducted exactly like that meeting was. Same arrangement, same type of organization. But he said there wasn't any unscriptural organization back there then, and that it was actually arranged in a way to keep from provoking criticism. Wasn't anybody in the brotherhood that had criticized it then, but they are now. Why? Because these brethren started a new sect among us. That's the reason why that this cooperative tent meeting, tent deal around here is no longer in vogue with these brethren here, because they can't do it and stand with you. And yet these brethren would leave the impression that we started something new here a few years ago. Secondly, they can no longer endorse the Montana cooperation effort, although some of them haven't repudiated it. I don't know whether even he has or not. In the next place, he couldn't admit that funds for a meeting house could be sent. Couldn't send funds for a meeting. One church couldn't have another church build a meeting house. If it can, then it can help in the field of evangelism. Unless he thinks they're so poor that they've got to have it to have a roof over their heads. I want to know if you put the building of a church building in the realm of benevolence or evangelism. Number four, you couldn't send Bibles or you couldn't send money for Bibles. Because if you did, it's in the field of evangelism. In the next place, you couldn't send tracts or money for tracts. That's in the field of evangelism. You couldn't send chairs for a vacation Bible school. Couldn't even loan them to somebody if they wanted to borrow. And incidentally, what are you going to do about these cooperative chairs we've been sitting in around here? Some of these chairs around here are cooperative chairs. And I don't know just how you're going to get rid of them, because to get rid of them, you're going to have to consult with these other congregations. And when you do, you're going to be engaging in a cooperative effort. You've got yourself into a situation where you're going to have to sin to get out of it according to your own position. You're going to have to cooperate to quit cooperating. Next, you couldn't use a tent for a gospel meeting. That is, you couldn't have a cooperative tent deal like you have here. And the same thing with reference to support of a preacher in another place if it were sent to the church. Our newspaper adds, this only leaves the door open for necessities for indigent saints. And of course, you can always pay the preacher. That's one thing they never have come up with opposing. Now that, friends, I insist, requires an answer. That's either so or it's not. If that's not so, I want him to answer tonight. We insist that it must be. And it's going to take more than just a lot of palaver and a lot of loud talking and so on to answer it. It's going to take an answer. All right, thank you. Now that, friends, covers my affirmative for this evening. I want to answer the speech that he made last night, because he's made a speech since I've had an opportunity to answer him. I want to call your attention, first of all, we may have the lights on, please, to the fact that he told us that Foy Wallace last night, Foy Wallace back in the 30s, was against and wrote against orphan homes. Well, now I'll let you decide. I'm not going to read a long affair here, but I'm going to read enough to let you know whether he correctly represented Fort Wallace or not. Here's an article copied from the Gospel Advocate of October the 27th, 1932. Now, that was back in the 30s, too. Written by Fort Wallace, then editor of the Advocate. And here's what he said. The Potter Home, now under the management of Brother H.H. Reeves, ranks as one of the best managed institutions of its kind anywhere. Everything about it is apparently as near to the ideal as such institution could approach. The home atmosphere, the tender interest and affection the children receive, the substantial home-like buildings and beautiful grounds. In fact, everything about it is beautiful. And to observe these children would remind us that the children of some of the parents we know would not be unfortunate in a home like this. Who said that? Why, Wallace? Listen further. Thus, we justify the existence of such institutions as an adjunct of the family, an auxiliary of the home, supplementing the work of parents. They're not church institutions. That's what I've been telling you all the week. Not church institutions. The home institution. Home institution. Well, that sounds like something Woods wrote, doesn't it? Does, doesn't it? But home institutions and all good people should be interested in them. Now, Cogdell, do you endorse that from Fort Wallace? And again, last night he told us that now then there's a great deal in the Herald of Truth that's of a dramatized nature. Now I'm going to show you, friends, it depends on the who and not the what. It isn't the what, it's the who. Look here, put this in the view here. We're going to see that it's the who rather than the what. Now we'll have the lights out, please, here. This is the paper that the Florida Christian College publishes. Now, they had a deal down here a while back in which they put on a program that was a dramatized affair of the life of the Apostle Paul. The background material was taken from the book of Acts of the Apostles with a few additional scenes that seemed to be in keeping. Few additional scenes! They even supplemented the New Testament. Few additional scenes! Which seemed to be in keeping. Seemed to be in keeping. I tell you, they're getting a head of inspiration now. Seemed to be in keeping with what inspiration had revealed. As much as possible, the script was a reproduction of the text. Of course, in some places, quotations from Ephesians, Hebrews, and 1 Corinthians and other books supplemented the wording. Occasionally, supplemented materials were put in. I'm against that way of handling the Word of God myself. But at any rate, this play was first produced and so on. Now, who participated in it? From left to right. In case that the characters are decorated in such fashion you can't recognize them, it tells us. From left to right, Homer Haley, the Apostle Peter. Edgar Shrigley, the Apostle James. Clinton D. Hamilton, the Apostle Paul, and so on. Our brethren. I'd either start writing against that or I'd quit opposing the Herald of Truth Light. I haven't seen anything in your pen, Cogdell, against this. It's the who rather than the what. Don't come up here and say, oh, this was in a school deal. Make a difference where it was. It still deals with matters that involve religious affairs and by people who allege to be Christians, and I'm sure that they intend to be. All right. Well, that's sufficient. That shows you that it's the who rather than the what. Now, on last evening, Mother Cogdell had a good bit to say with reference to the Herald of Truth and its financial affairs. I'm going to take up his charts very briefly right here now, and I think that in order to enable these brethren to handle them as rapidly as possible, I'll start in with number 19. That was the last one, and so we'll go backward, if we may, from that, so as to keep them in order. Number 19, let me know when I have 5 minutes, please. Here is a chart in which he spends a good bit of effort and did spend a good bit of time in the discussion of it in talking about the financial condition of the Herald of Truth. He made this statement that only 40% of the money actually raised went into the preaching of the gospel. Brother Collier tells me that the truth of the business is it's 88%. Not 40, as Brother Cogdell said. 88%. Now, I'm going to insist that Brother Collier is in a much better position to know the truth about it than Brother Cogdell. I feel sure that Brother Cogdell doesn't deliberately intend to misrepresent it. I'm sure that he relies upon evidence that's not reliable. I maintain that he needs to prove his position. Let him prove it if he can. All right, now. This is a matter in which he spent a good bit of time. Evidently, this is an old chart. I should like to call your attention to the fact, first of all, that he has up here Harper, Williford, and Company. It's been many months since Williford's had any connection with it. Brother Williford is now preaching in Fort Worth. And then again, he has Brother Reese's name. Of course, Brother Reese is no longer with us in the land of the living. But it's been many months since Harper, or since Williford, had any connection with the program. And so that shows that this is an old affair. Maybe it's information. All of it is old. But I want you to see what's really happening over there. Brethren, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to introduce another chart, so if you all want to sit down, you may do so. Let's have now a chart with reference to the... Here, please. May I have the lights out, please? Note if you will here. How much? All right, notice if you will here. We have here the Herald of Truth. There are 270 radio stations that are now carrying the gospel message. There are 77 TV stations that are a part of this great network. This program reaches into 49 states, just one of the states, of the 50 into which this program doesn't go. And in addition to Canada, Bermuda, the Panama Canal Zone, the Philippine Islands, and Africa. The Nielsen survey, and may I call your attention to the fact that that's an independent survey. That's often utilized by advertising concerns to test the value of a particular type of advertising program. This survey estimates that the Herald of Truth is reaching 100 million people this year with its program. The total cost, including every expense, is $550,000. Now let me call your attention to this. CPA audits all books twice per year, and all employees are bonded to assure proper use of funds. Now get this especially. There are 43 TV stations who are giving the time to the program, and this amounts to $650,000 worth of time. That much time given free. That would not be available to us but for the fact that the program is on the air. This makes a total, counting the value of the time that's given, what it would cost if we had to buy. This makes this a $1,200,000 program, which costs less than one half that amount. I maintain that that's a bargain. The price, according to this Nielsen survey, the price of a cup of coffee will reach 41 people, according to this independent Nielsen survey. Now let's turn it over, please. Get this, friends. According to KCMO, Kansas City, Missouri, when they made their own spot check, there was at that one time 84,000 homes listening to the Herald of Truth in their area. There are 17 million people in the listening area of one New York broadcast. This station has carried the Herald of Truth every Sunday for 10 years. And still there are the places that need it. Just this week, these brethren received an appeal from a community somewhere down in Georgia where there was a great need for a program. The brethren felt that their commitments were to the extent of their ability at the present time, but they didn't want to turn it down. They said, in some fashion or other, we'll put it on that station. Brother Collier mentioned that to some brother in this building this week. This brother said, how much would it cost a year to put it on? Brother Collier said $144. He wrote him out a check for it and handed it to him. That, friends, is in brief what this program is doing. Now then, inasmuch as we've introduced these matters, I have a financial deal here that I should like for you to notice. I may beg pardon. All right. Just for a point of comparison, I want you to see who's really reaching the people with the money. Here is a financial statement from which, and I should like for you to, if you wish to compare these statements, you may do so. The Newbern Financial Report for 1960, that's the last one that was available to me. For our benevolence, they spent $198.22 that year, or 1.4% of their total expense. Brother Connie Adams, their preacher, counted for $4,800, and that doesn't include his preacher's home, if I understand the matter correctly. He can correct me on that, but I don't think it does. All right, if it doesn't, then he got 34% of the total expense, or 24 times as much as they spent for benevolence. The janitor received $435, or 3% of the total expense, over twice as much as they spent for benevolence, twice as much for janitor service here. For bulletins, they spent for an air conditioner, $216.95. That was 1.5% of the total expense, more than was spent for benevolence, for the air conditioner. For bulletins, they spent $520.34, or 3.7% of the total. For interest, they spent $1,152.43, which was 8% of the total, or 5 times as much as they spent for benevolence. For mission work, they spent $954.60, or 7% of the total. Brother Connie Adams received $4,800. Now, I do not know whether the preacher's home is included in that or not. I'm assuming it's not in the $4,800. If it's not, then he received 5 times as much as was spent in mission work. For interest, they spent $1,152.43, or $197.83 more than was spent on mission work. Now, let's have this other chart here that I won't put on every time. I want an answer to this question here, Cogdell. Put it up here. Does Cogdell say this is scriptural for one church to send the New Testament to another church? If so, what scripture authorizes it? Be sure to put the scripture down, I think.
Leads to a very rapid discussion of a lot of matters that are purely extraneous to the proposition that Brother Woods is under obligation to prove. He assumed what he ought to prove in the beginning of his speech and didn't prove anything that he's under obligation to prove in order to establish his proposition. I asked him last night to find for us the example in the New Testament or a precept or a necessary inference where one church ever sent money to another church to preach the gospel. Now, I want you to ask yourself a question. What passage to decide on that? Now, brethren, just be honest about the matter. What passage did Brother Wood cite on the matter of a church sending money to another church to preach the gospel? That's what he needs. He spends his time talking about Cogdell's inconsistencies and proving that somebody else is inconsistent. But he doesn't spend any of his 30 minutes giving you the passage. Any passage. Not a single solitary passage. None at all. That sets forth either a precept or an example or a necessary inference that one church ever sent money to another church. It doesn't matter what else they may do about the matter. And it doesn't matter what Cogdell's answer to any of his questions may be, or how inconsistent Cogdell may have been. If he could discredit Roy Cogdell altogether, that wouldn't furnish Bible proof for his proposition, would it? Now, would it? Where is the passage? Now, Brother Woods, when you come back up here on the roster, before you forget about it at the very first of your speech, and before you get so wound up in a lot of other matters, I want you to tell us the passage that you've cited and turn and read the passage for us, or find it and let us read it, in which the Bible authorizes, either by precept, by approved, apostolically approved example, or by necessary inference, that the Bible authorizes in either of these three ways one church sending money to another church to preach the gospel. Now, that's what your proposition's crying for, and that's the only kind of proof that these people in this audience who have respect for the Word of God are going to accept. I ask him for an example or an inference or some sort of kind of scriptural authority, a precept of some kind that teaches that a church should or that one ever did send its money through another church, make another church its agent to do anything at all. What did he say about that? He talked about everything else. You know, he's the greatest fellow to brag about answering everything anybody says. And when he gets ready to quit, he says, now that answers everything he said. And you wouldn't know it if he didn't tell you about it, would you? What did he say about one church sending money through another church to a work, any kind of a work, to which they were equally related and under equal obligations so far as God is concerned? Where did one church ever make another church its agent? What passage did he cite that gives us any sort of kind of authority for that? I ask him then to cite a passage of Scripture to give us some scriptural authority in either way. Not just by specific example. He charged that as what I wanted. I denied it. Any kind of Bible authority for one church sending money to another church under any circumstances or anything else where it wasn't needed and where the church itself could not supply. Now, Brother Woods, where did the church ever send money to another church, benevolence to another church, or assistance to another church that wasn't in need? Why, you can't say the Jerusalem church is an example. That's what you've hinted at. But the Jerusalem church was in need. A destitute church. A church that had more needy, destitute people in it than they themselves could provide for. And he wants to make the Jerusalem church a parallel with that. Now, that's just about as ridiculous as a man can get it when it comes to trying to prove something. From my point of view, that's a ridiculous sort of proof. That here's a church that sends money itself to every church in the country that it can justify and that it has any money to send to, Highland sending, according to their own financial statement, to a dozen or more different churches. They're sending to work all over the country and begging money from other churches all over the country. Well, Highland isn't in need. They're able to contribute. For as a Highland church is concerned, they have an abundance. They're able to help others. And they do help others. Not in the deepness of their poverty either. Why, they've got a magnificent cathedral in which to preach. They're carrying on an expensive program of local work. And the $4,800 that's paid Connie Adams, which is a very meager salary, as present-day preacher salaries go, in this congregation, doesn't begin to look like it might even halfway compare with what they pay their local preacher. You look into their financial statement. Now, they're elaborate in the way they do things. It isn't a church in need there. It isn't a church that has more destitution than it can provide for. Why get up here and try to palm off the idea on thinking people that Jerusalem and Highland are parallel? There isn't any parallelism about it. Nothing even that begins to look like it might be. Oh, he said he quoted from Fort Wallace, and Fort Wallace endorsed the orphan home. I didn't quote from Fort Wallace on the orphan home. I was quoting from Fort Wallace on your kind of church cooperation. On the same principle, if the elders of one congregation solicit the funds of other congregations for general distribution, then the elders of one congregation usurps the function of the congregation whose funds they receive and disburse. It is the same in principle as if a society or an individual should do so. That's what Fort Wallace said about your kind of cooperation. And I could read a lot more about it. But listen, if he contradicted himself the next day, that doesn't remove the fact that he said this. Will you deny that he said this? Did he say this? Will you deny that he said what I've read from him? That's my point. Here was opposition. Opposition to one church soliciting funds from other churches with which to carry on a program of... That doesn't remove the fact that he said this. Will you deny that he said this? Did he say this? Will you deny that he said what I've read from him? That's my point. Here was opposition. Opposition to one church soliciting funds from other churches with which to carry on a program of work that it had promoted but it was unable to pay for. And its opposition so definite that you can't misunderstand it. And he said it's an eldership making a society out of themselves. And I quoted it not to prove anything except this one fact. And all of the excerpts I read were to prove that. The same position I occupy both with reference to the benevolent proposition and with reference to the Herald of Truth proposition has been opposed in years past. I don't care if the brethren opposed it and then practiced it. I don't care if they opposed it and then reversed their position. That's not the point. The point is they said what I read and what I've read to you is opposition. The same kind of opposition that I've been making. Now, the fact of the whole matter is that the preaching of brethren for many years, for a good many years, even in my own generation, and along with nearly everybody else that I know anything about, to some degree, I was guilty. And that's why he can find, away back yonder, statements and things that have been corrected in my own effort to preach the gospel and serve Jesus Christ. Here's the proposition. We were contending for principles that were not in harmony with what we were practicing in a good many instances. And it was true all over the whole country. We were claiming we speak where the Bible speaks and we'll be silent where the Bible's silent. That we'll call Bible things by Bible names and do Bible things in Bible ways. And then we were beginning in the building of these benevolent organizations and in the beginning of these big missionary programs and the sponsored church arrangement, we were beginning the practice of things that were not in harmony with the scriptural basis upon which We pretended to stand. And thank God that thousands of brethren all over the country have seen, just like the New Bern Church has seen, Brother Woods, that what they were doing was not in harmony with the position that they were seeking to occupy. And they brought their practice into harmony with what they preached and what they stood for. That's what's happened. And I thank God for churches like New Bern and elders like the New Bern Church that have seen the light and that have changed their practice to conform with the principles that they were trying to stand for. And I've got a lot more respect for people that will honestly do that and have enough respect for the Word of God to do it when they see that they're wrong than I have for them when they go the other route, and that is change their preaching to accommodate it to their practice. May God prevent any of us from ever doing that. And so there's where your inconsistency in statements and in practice comes in. And may the Lord help more of us to see that when our practice is not consistent with the principles of New Testament truth, it needs to be changed, and to change it. Well, he told us, you know, that he didn't like my way of debating. I don't answer anything that he says to hear him talk about it. Now, that's the proof of the weakness of a man's position and his proposition. And that's Brother Wood's tactics. I haven't heard him in a debate what he didn't get up and say. I think I can get every written or every published debate that he's had. And in every one of them, Curtis Porter, Roy Cogdell, and Grider, and all the rest, his opponent was the weakest and the most vulnerable that he ever met in his life. Now, brethren, that's just plain old tactics that every sectarian preacher I've ever met in my life employed. Every one of them. He's going to tell you who's winning this debate. He's afraid you don't know if he doesn't tell you. So he's going to keep you informed about that. Now, you just overlook that because Brother Woods can't help it. He's done it so long, he just can't help it. And his effort to discredit the work of his opponent, oh, he'll compliment his ability, but he never answers anything. Now, he'd like for me to get up here and take up his charts, have them flash back on the board and mention every scripture in the order in which he mentioned it. And that's his idea of the obligation that I have. Well, I met D.N. Jackson, the Baptist preacher, on two different occasions. He made 26 different arguments and numbered them 1, 2, 3 and on down the line, proving that a man can be saved by faith and without being baptized. It's all the same argument. And a lot of passages to support the same argument, but he had them numbered in different arguments. And when I got up and just grouped them all together and pointed out that not a single one of the 26 passages that he used said one word on earth about the relation of baptism to salvation. That's what he was denying. Every one of them talked about being saved by faith. They proved salvation by faith. They proved nothing with reference to baptism's relationship to salvation. Not a word in the world. And when I grouped them together and answered the whole argument, he complained just like Guy Woods. Now, he designed it so that he thought that I'd get up and go into detail and take my time up following him around as he meandered around and not deal with the fundamental principles of the proposition. Now, it just happens that I've got another way of debating to that. I've got another way of debating. You may be dissatisfied with it. My brethren are not so dissatisfied with it. I had two churches. One in Nashville, Tennessee, and one in Memphis, come to me last night and asked me to see if you would agree to meet me in Nashville and in Memphis. And I've got a dozen or 15 letters endorsing me to meet you in different parts of the United States. And don't ever say I ever refused to do it, because I haven't. I haven't. Anywhere where the brethren want it. I'm not in the business of promoting debates. A.C. Grider has endorsements from churches all over this country. Now, Brother Woods, if we were such poor debaters, it looks like our brethren would call on somebody else. For my part, I'd be glad for them to. This is hard work, as far as I'm concerned. Debating is, and the responsibility of it is tremendous. A tremendous thing. And I'm not coveting the honor of being a debater or making a reputation as one. But I know New Testament truth when I hear it, and you haven't produced any. In all that you've had to say. And he will not when he closes his last speech tomorrow night on Bible authority. For one church sending money to another church. If you could prove that every church in the world sent New Testaments to every other church in the world, it wouldn't prove that one church sent money to another church to preach the gospel with. And that's what your proposition called for. The herald of truth is not receiving New Testaments. Churches are not sending New Testaments to Highland. They're sending money to Highland. Hundreds of thousands of dollars of money. And that's what you're arguing about, and that's what your proposition calls for. Why don't you prove it, Brother Woods? And why don't you prove it in the New Testament by some kind of authority that one church can use another church as an agent? Why, when you get through dealing with that, you can't stay in the debate, to put it in your term. Because you don't have any Bible authority on that. There's no Bible authority at all. Now, I don't have, and the elders of this church do not have any disposition whatever to make any defense of anything that they have done, which they're not doing now. And when you get up and talk about a preacher's salary as if the preacher was being overpaid and the preacher wasn't doing evangelistic work and the preacher, the local preacher, out of his salary, is not holding mission meetings, well, you're just reflecting on the truth in the matter. Because the truth in the matter, they're out of that salary. Connie Adams has held 3 mission meetings at the expense of this church this year. So you better add that to your total. You talk about picking at some business statement that you don't know anything about. You should have found out something about what the local program of this congregation included. Now, you said Brother Cogdill didn't know anything about the program or the financial matters of the Herald of Truth. Brother Collier said this and said that about it. And Brother Cogdill just didn't know anything about it. At least he doesn't know anything as much as Brother Collier knows about it. Well, all I know about it is what they put out. This is all I've got. And you know what this figures? I had a CPA estimated for me today. 43.8% of the money sent in spent for preaching. A certified public accountant. Estimated. Now, I don't know whether he knows anything about what he's doing or not. I didn't make these figures up. I wasn't the one that put this together and set it down there. And you know another thing that he discovered in it for me? Is that there's $20,000 in one of these items. I gave credit for being a misprint. He said it can't be. It won't work out that way. $20,000 unaccounted for. And if you didn't have any other item, except the fact that there is $64,000, unless the $20,000 ought to be added to that, $548.83 spent for postage, printing, travel, fees, publicity, or travel and fees, publicity, and so forth. You just think about that. Why, that'd support how many preachers being paid like Connie Adams is being paid. You pay men $5,000 a year and spend $550,000 a year preaching. That'll support 110 preachers on a full-time basis in the mission field or anywhere else. And when you put 110 preachers in the mission field to spend their entire time preaching the gospel, not just once a week, but teaching and preaching every day and all of the time, you tell me that that won't accomplish more than a weekly program over the Herald of Truth or anything else? And I think you can see that it will. Why, of course it does. And where is there a congregation that the Herald of Truth ever established just by itself? Now, you know this business of extending the cause of Jesus Christ and going into mission territory and establishing churches through the Herald of Truth. They just can't do it. That's kind of like taking Britain by air. You can just bomb the thing all you want to, but you're going to have to put an army on the field in order to get the job done. Why not just put the army on the field to start with and let them do their own preaching over the radio in their own community? Why, here's the thing, and you know this hurts, and I can't help it. I'm not responsible for what's happening to it. Church is sending dollars and many dollars. And when they get repaid, and he said, Cogdill's not keeping up with the Herald of Truth. I don't profess to keep up with it. But whether Harper's doing the preaching, or Willoughby's doing the preaching, or Baxter's doing the preaching, they're all getting paid for it. They're not doing it for nothing. So whoever the preachers are, and the reason I put it up there, and it is painted just about 2 weeks before this debate, Brother Woods. It isn't an old one. It's even a right brand new sheet that it's painted on, as well as a new chart. And if you pay the preachers and pay the elders that are running it, pay your promotion costs, your production costs, your management costs, your dollars that are contributed straight into dimes. When it goes back to actually do the preaching, it's the old story of the missionary society all over again. Why, I heard the story one time of a man that gave a dime to a fellow that was soliciting money for a missionary society. And then he handed him a dollar, and he said, what's that for? He said, that's to get the dam to the field. Now, that's exactly what it takes. That's exactly what it takes. And friends, you can get now, if you want a copy of this statement, if you didn't get it, then you want a copy of it, and sit down with your pencil and do all the figuring on it you want to. This is, listen to it, it is the statement of operations of the Herald of Truth radio and TV program, not of the Highland Church. Not of the Highland Church, and brethren, come get me, chart 18. Not of the Highland Church, but of the Herald of Truth radio and TV program. Now, I don't know if the Highland Church is incorporated or unincorporated. If it's an incorporated institution, proper practice in the matter of accounting would require that this be put out as an operating statement. That is ethical practice, and it would require that it be put out in an operating statement of the Highland Church. And if it isn't put out as an operating statement of the Highland Church, if that's all there is to it, then it would be construed an ethical accounting practice, would say, and you can consult any accountant you want to on that. But the implication would be that it's being operated as a separate endeavor, as a partnership. Now, if this is a statement of the Highland Church's financial operations, why on earth don't they say so? This is a copy of what they mailed out. And if you want a copy of it, I hope it can be made available to you. Because you ought to get it. You ought to get it. Oh, he said somebody gave Brother Collier $140. Well, Brother Collier raises money over where he goes. He's in that business. And I have an idea that he found somebody here that would be willing to contribute to it. All of you fellas ought to be. Every one of you. Some of the rest of you ought to give him some money for it, as much as you believe in it. Well, he said the proposition of the argument on the total situation had not been replied to. And, of course, he's wrong about that. But, you know, he flashed a chart up here, and I don't have a copy of it and don't know which one it was, but it doesn't matter. The constituent elements of the total situation, the gospel's to be preached, man must believe, man must repent, man must confess, man must be baptized. Now, these are all, and this came from the Hathaway Weah Deaver debate, page 123. Here are the constituent elements, and all of them are so. Therefore, this is the pattern of the plan of conversion. Nobody has any argument with that. But now, suppose you didn't have the right equation. Suppose that you say, now remember, I'm not saying, but suppose that you were to say that number 4, instead of confess Christ, must be baptized and then saved. Or must be saved and then be baptized. Suppose you got it out of order. A man must believe and repent and confess Christ and be baptized in order to be saved. These are the elements, and that's the total situation. But your equation could be mixed up. The Baptists say, he that believeth and is saved shall be baptized. They have the same elements, but they don't have them added up right, do they? They've got them out of order. That's the thing. That's the fault that they've made. They have them out of order. Now, don't get up and charge me with saying that baptism comes after salvation. I'm using Baptist doctrine as an illustration. Baptist doctrine is an illustration. And then the question comes up about worship. The same thing exactly is true. Or you could do the plan of salvation like the Mormons do. You could do what he does. Stick in an element that he can't prove by the word of God if his life depended upon it. You know, the Mormons include laying on of hands and the distribution of spiritual gifts as a condition of salvation. They've added one to it that doesn't belong in there. And the Baptists mix up the elements and pervert it by getting them out of order. And you can ruin a total situation in either direction. I called to his attention last night that 2 quarts of water plus 2 quarts of alcohol does not make 4 quarts of anything. Well, he says it'll make all it'll make. Yeah, but it won't make 4 quarts. And 2 plus 2 quarts is 4 quarts. And so it doesn't work. It doesn't work in the field of chemistry. And it doesn't work any better for you in religion, because the constituent elements of your proposition is what you're under obligation to prove, and you haven't proved them. Well, which one haven't you proved? You haven't proved the one that takes for granted the fact that a church can send money to another church for the purpose of preaching the gospel of Christ. That's what you haven't proved, Brother Woods. And you won't prove that when this debate's over. You listen. It is the way the argument originated, the existence of a need, a work to be done in a field in which two churches sustain the same relationship. Number one. Number two, congregation A assumes the oversight. And remember that it's the assumption of the oversight. Now all of your charts on Jerusalem are not, apropos to this proposition. You have a situation that isn't comparable to Jerusalem, it isn't comparable to Acts 11. Not for the reason that it is evangelism instead of benevolence that we're discovering, or that we're discussing, but for the reason that your illustrations or your examples do not fit your proposition. Those churches were in need. They were destitute. Highland isn't. Highland isn't. That's the point. And so the second is a congregation. They assumed the oversight of the accomplishment of this work. Did Jerusalem assume the oversight of taking care of their own media? Did God appoint it? And was it their obligation? Is it Highland's obligation under the Great Commission to preach the gospel over the radio for the whole world? Did God obligate the Highland congregation to preach the gospel over the radio and TV everywhere, or just as far as that one congregation could reach out of its ability and out of its resources? Why, the answer is the only obligation that Highland has is measured in the sight of God by her own resources. But Jerusalem was obligated to take care of their own to the full extent of their ability. And if they had been able to do it, they could have done their whole work. They did as far as they could. And when they were unable to do what that one congregation, just like a man's under obligation to make a living for his family, if he gets to where he can't do it, somebody else can take over and help him. Not take over his family, but contribute to him in order that he might fulfill his obligation to his family. The elders of the church are responsible for the distribution of benevolence to the members of that congregation that are destitute. And when they cannot provide the resources to take care of the destitute of that congregation, other congregations can contribute to them. Well, of course. Everybody believes that. And that's all your chart on 2 Corinthians. It's all your chart on 1 Corinthians 16. It's all your chart on Acts 11. All that it proves. But he says the Great Commission now is the operation or the marching orders. And the Highland Church is working under the Great Commission. She's fulfilling her obligation by the oversight. And he had it pictured up here in one of his pictures. And the other churches are fulfilling their obligation under the Great Commission by contributing their money. The obligation of some churches is just to give money then, and the obligation of other churches is to oversee the work. Some churches have the oversight under the Great Commission. Other churches simply have the obligation to contribute. Now, I'm not the author of that. That's what he's arguing, and you know that so. I want to know, how do you determine which congregation is obligated to take the oversight and which congregation is obligated only to contribute? How did you arrive at that? How did the elders at Abilene find out the Lord expected them to have the oversight and other churches just to do the giving? And then if they have the oversight, do they have the oversight of the Great Commission and its fulfillment? If they're just fulfilling their obligation and all of these other churches are fulfilling their obligation under the Great Commission, then they have the oversight of the fulfillment of the obligation of those other churches under the Great Commission. That's his argument. He says if a church can send the tract, then a church can send the money. If a church can send the New Testament, the church can send the money. If a church can send the preacher, then the church can send the money. If a church can send the radio message, then the church can send the money. Well, the churches don't send radio messages to Highland. They get them from Highland. They send money to Highland. Your parallel on that fails. Yeah, the tract is sent to another church. The New Testament sent to another church. The preacher is sent to another church. But the radio message is not sent to another church. That parallel won't work with the Herald of Truth. Now, if you're paralleling your argument on it's any good at all, if it proves anything, then what does it prove? Well, it proves that if a church can send money to Highland to send out the radio message, then a church can send money to Highland to send out New Testaments. And a church can send money to Highland to send out tracts. And a church can send money to Highland to send out preachers. That's what you proved. Do you believe it? Do you believe it? Whenever you believe it and accept that, you'll have a missionary society as sure as you live. Now then, I want to know if you'd endorse this kind of an arrangement. These cooperation meetings were assemblies of the delegated messengers of the congregations who, when they came together, organized themselves with their president. That isn't the statement I wanted to read. Here it is in the same bulletin on another page. Full-time missionary plan started. Half a dozen weekly county churches of Christ taking leads in planning to team up to support a full-time missionary. None of them is large enough to handle such a project alone. Well, that's the way it proves the Herald of Truth. But together they'll be able to provide full financial support according to leaders working on details. David Davidson, minister of the Martin Church of Christ, presided at a recent session in Martin with 34 representatives of the congregations, including three preachers, to discuss plans. As outlined at the session, one full-time missionary would be supported on a mission field, either in the United States or abroad, with the congregation sharing expenses according to agreement. Actual sponsorship will be in the hands of one church for 1 year, then rotated to the others in turn. A committee made up of one member of each congregation would select the missionary and his field, then submit the required budget to a joint meeting of the churches. Now, that's a Tennessee Missionary Society in a county in this state, formed by churches of Christ, electing their representatives, setting up their plans, turning the money handling over to one church for all the churches in the county, and putting the preacher and the field under the selection of a committee elected.
Brother Cogdell, ladies and gentlemen, I should like to say that my original affirmation stands untouched. Brother Cogdell made no effort to reply to the argument made. He made a lot of assertions, but he made no effort to show that these premises do not follow, and that therefore the conclusion is invalid. I should like to call his attention to the fact that he has not yet answered the question, can one church send the New Testament to another church? I maintain that that's valid and pertinent to this issue. He was taking the position as he was closing out there that for one church to send a New Testament to another church is in principle, as he linked it in with his statements, to a missionary society. Now, I don't believe that. Brother Cogdell is in position that he has to take that position in order to stay in this debate, yet he won't answer the question. Yet we have a statement in Colossians chapter 4 and verse 16, where the Apostle Paul instructed the church in Colossae to read the letter that was written to the church in Laodicea. We have an exact example of one church sending a divine message, to another church, Colossians 4 and 16. Now, I wouldn't be afraid to answer the question, but Cogdell can't answer it because his whole house comes tumbling down when he does. Because if he admits that a church can send a New Testament to another church, then one church can assist another church in evangelism. And that's the very premise upon which his whole proposition rests. Now, Brother Cogdell, it seems like it's high past time for you to answer that question. I would be glad for these people who are here tonight to leave here knowing what your view is on that. We'll have another night to deal with it. I'll have no reply tonight, but I will tomorrow night. And I just urge you to have the courage of conviction sufficient to enable you to answer that question. Are you afraid to? Is it that you are so fearful of the consequences of this debate that you're just afraid to answer? I'll give you 1 minute of my time to get up here and answer right now. Now, friends, before I get myself into a position like that, I'd give up the thing I was trying to defend that's as ridiculous as this. I'm made to wonder how you brethren out there can have any feeling at all that this man is defending his position in this debate. Doesn't it take anything for you to be satisfied? If I were debating with a Baptist and he asked me some questions that I just wouldn't answer, if I were one of the elders, I'd kick me out of the debate and I'd get me a man that would debate. That's what I'd do. Now then he says Jerusalem is not parallel to Highland because in that case, that Jerusalem's need was met, and that in this case it isn't a need of Highland. Let me insist this, friends. that in the first place, all congregations are equally related to a given work, but one of them may assume that work, or at least may begin the work, in which case then, it sustains a relationship that differs from that of other congregations. For example, when this congregation assumed the radio program in this area, and no other congregation had one, there was a different relationship between this congregation and that radio program and the other congregations. And in what we're defending here tonight is just this, that may sister congregations cooperate under the Great Commission in the discharge of their duty when one of the participating congregations takes care of the details. Somebody might say, well, why is it necessary for one congregation to have oversight of the program? How else could you conduct one on a cooperative basis? Is he opposed to all cooperation between congregations in preaching the gospel? Well, the Cogdill's position is that there isn't any such thing as cooperation between congregations in the field of evangelism. Now, I put up here a chart that raised this question. If Highland were to put the program under the preacher instead of under the elders, would he accept it? He charges that the pattern is to send to the preacher. I ask him that question. No answer. No answer. Why can't we get an answer to these questions? Why can't we? That's what a debate's for, brethren. To test positions. Now then, his position is under scrutiny here tonight and has been all along. We need to know, Brother Calder. You've got to get it in a scriptural attitude for you. He says, what I have not proved is that one church can send money from to another church. He says, I haven't proved that. Now I should like to call his attention to the fact that in the first place, he ignores that there is a distinction between specific and generic authority. I charged a while ago that he was demanding a specific example. He demands of me what he doesn't require of himself. I pointed out to you last night that there isn't a specific example of where one church ever sent a dime to another church for any purpose. A specific example. Now, we all believe that we may deduce that such was done, but there's no specific example. Do you say Acts 11, 27 to 30? That doesn't say the church sent to the church at Jerusalem. It says the disciples. Now, remember, we're looking for a specific example. Or you may say, well, the disciples combined constitute the church. Well, I think so in some instances. But he thinks that that certain things could be done individually, but not collectively. Now then, could each one of these disciples individually, the whole of them, engage in a work which he would refuse to acknowledge that the church could do? Again, he can't cite the great contribution of 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, because in that instance, while it said the church is sent, yet they sent to the poor saints, it doesn't say they sent the church down there. I think that it involves the church. I think you can deduce that. But you remember that he asked for a specific example. There isn't an example. There isn't any example where a dime was ever taken out of the Lord's Day treasury to pay a preacher. Not a dime. Let's have that chart 48, please, to show that. Chart 48. Now you look at this, friends. Here is the only passage of Scripture in the New Testament that we have to authorize the contribution on the first day of the week. Let each one of you lay by in store on the first day of the week as you've been prospered. Now, what was the purpose of that contribution? Was it for preaching the gospel? That's not what the purpose is stated. Was it for the purpose of helping the needy saints of the Corinthian church? No. For what purpose? To assist in the physical needs of the members of another congregation. Now, suppose that I should be before you tonight affirming that it's sinful to pay a preacher out of the Lord's Day treasury. I'm affirming, just for example now, that it's sinful and wrong to pay a preacher out of the Lord's Day contribution. I stand up here and I say, Cardinal, cite me a passage of Scripture that authorizes the church to pay a preacher out of the Lord's Day treasure. He cites 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. I'd say, well, you can't cite that. That's not an example of it. And it isn't. Yet Brother Cardinal takes that as being proof that it's right to use money raised in that fashion for the purpose of paying a preacher. Is he correct in it? I think he is. But he demands of me that which he is unwilling to accept for himself. He denies and rejects the idea of generic authority. And I'm surprised he would resort to an argument that a Baptist preacher would make to try to meet this constituent element's argument. He said, oh, there is an essential order involved. Well, I think so in some things. There's some things that are that involve an order. And it so happens that baptism as an essential constituent element must follow confession. He turned around and said, what if you'd say it's repentance and salvation and then baptism? Well, you'd be wrong, just like a Baptist is. That's the type of argument he used to try to show it. Now, Brother Cargo, that's no answer to it at all. The Baptist is wrong on it, just like you're wrong on it. And you haven't answered the argument. Well, now let's note a little further here. He said we could put 110 preachers in the field and do more good than is being done with what the Herald of Truth is doing. Now, I don't think Brother Caldwell's correct about that. I don't think he knows how much good could be done in that respect. I don't think he means to tell us that they could reach as many people. 110 preachers reach as many people as a program that goes to 49 states and to a number of foreign countries. Is he trying to tell this intelligent audience that 110 preachers could preach to that many people? Well, even if they could, why haven't you got them out doing it? You say, oh, well, that's the way we ought to do it. We weren't doing it. We weren't doing it. I think we ought to have the 110 out, too. I'm highly in favor of you starting that movement, Caldwell. When are you going to get it going? If you don't want to contribute a dime to the Herald of Truth, all right, don't. But get the 110 preachers going. I like the way these brethren are doing it better than the way you're not doing it. I would suggest that that's a good thing. You notice his percentage shrinks as he goes along. Particularly with reference to his chart here. He had a chart up here. Let's have that chart now. You just leave it. Let's close the projector down. Let's have the lights for a moment, please. It was the chart that has the dollar shrinks to a dime. He told us that it's shrunk to 43%, but then on his chart he has that it shrinks to a dime. Well, anyway, that's all right, brethren. All right, here it is, right here. Here's what I want to get at. He says here that the dollars contributed into it shrinks to dimes for preaching. Now, his chart is inconsistent with his speech, but then that's about as close as he gets to matters anyway, so I'm not going to complain at him about that. I think he's wrong about both. He says, I met Dr. B.N. Jackson a couple of times. Well, I met him 5 times. He pointed out that Jackson argues the doctrine of faith only, and Jackson put up a lot of arguments. Well, if he didn't do a better job with Jackson than he did with me, I tell you, the truth suffered on that occasion. I didn't hear either one of them. I'm not saying it did. But I'm just saying that I hope, Caldwell, you did a much better job. I hope you answered his arguments. Because the thing about it is that Jackson was making the same kind of arguments that you're making here, in principle. Exactly the same kind of argument. I'll show you that. For example, you produce an instance where the New Testament shows that money was sent, or that is, means was sent, from one church to a preacher. Now, that's right. None of us deny that. It'd be legitimate to cite that if we didn't believe that that was the right way, but we all believe that's right. But you assume that because the Bible says it was sent that way, that it means it was sent that way only. Now, note, please. We read in John 3 and 16, John 5 and 44, and John 3 and 18 and so on, that salvation is by faith. Jackson cites passages like that because these passages say that salvation is by faith. He deduces that it's by faith only. Because the New Testament says that money was sent to a preacher, Cogdell deduces that it must be sent that way only. His error is the same as the Baptist. I don't wonder. Now you thought of D.N. Jackson in connection with this. You got a good idea from him there, from your viewpoint. I've had an invitation from brethren to debate with you again. I'm not surprised at that. I get invitations all along. I have a standing offer to Roy Caldwell or to any other man for a debate in Indianapolis. I'm endorsed by the Garfield Heights Church there, and I've been instructed to point out that any time these brethren will get an endorsement, from one of the congregations in that area, we were ready for our debate there. Now, you can just get busy on it. You'll say, what about one in Memphis? Well, in the first place, let me call your attention to this fact. There are 40-odd congregations in the Memphis area. There are perhaps two groups that stand with him, one of which is very small, the other not large. We just don't think that a debate's needed on this question there. The same thing in Nashville. The same thing in Nashville. Where we have an equal standing with you. We've done that every time. In Nashville, for example, 115 congregations, four or five groups or so. Why? Give you an audience. It doesn't make any difference how bad you whip one of these fellows. He'll always take another, and if he can just get an audience of our folks to preach to. Well, we're not in the business of giving you audiences. It is a shame, friends, that it has to be this way. 15 years ago, Brother Cogle was on my side of this. 15 years ago, he was conducting a meeting in Houston, Texas, in which he said that what we're arguing here is scriptural. That is, he was endorsing a meeting of that time. A few years ago, this congregation was in fellowship with all the congregations around and participating in a work that you now say is wrong. I'm glad that he had the courage to say you changed. Well, he was right about it. You have changed, this congregation has. Formerly, it had another view. It's changed its position. Its elders ceased to lead as they were leading when there was as they originally did. I'm sorry that such is the case. Why don't you come back and be where you were, and we'll be right with you. We're right where you were when you left us. If there is division here, and there is, it's because you changed. Cogdell said so. Now, if you change again, you'll be back where all of us have been all along and where we were before the division came. He says, show an example of where one church ever sent money through another church. Well, I'm not arguing that money should be sent through another church. We don't send money through Highland. We send the money down there for them to use to pay for a radio time. What difference would it be, Mac, whether or not you put it in the hands of some brother to send down here to the radio station to pay? He'd have control of the money while he was on the way to the radio station, but if he took and bought gasoline with it, he'd misappropriate the funds, and that's exactly what these brethren would do if they use it for any other purpose except that for which the church has sent it. They decide what to send, when to send, where to send, how long to send, when to quit. Nobody can question that. He said, show where one church ever acted as the agent of another. Why, the Highland Church doesn't act as an agent for these churches. Nobody claims that it does. We don't claim it's an agent. If it is, then the Jerusalem Church became an agent for Antioch, and it's right for one church to be an agent of another if that happened there, which I don't believe it did. You don't think so either? Well, I'm glad you don't. Neither does Highland. I don't think it does either, because they do exactly the same thing. Now, friends, that covers his speech. If he asked me a question, if he asked me a single question that I haven't dealt with fully, I haven't got it here, and I noted down everything that he said. That covers his speech item by item. There isn't a thing that he said that I haven't dealt with. Not a thing. Now, I wish that he would deal with mine as fully. I want to take up his charts now, each one of them. How much? All right, fine. Now, let's have, we've already dealt with this one. Let's have chart number, that's 19 there, is it? Let's have chart number 17. Now, you see, Brother Cogle thinks so much of this constituent elements business that he even got it on his chart. We've all used these arguments. He has it in his book, The New Testament Church. And he asked the question last night that in his last speech when I had, of course, no opportunity to answer him. He wanted to know what part of the work of one church could be delegated to another. He said, could you delegate the resources of the worship of the Word? We don't believe that there is any part of the work of one church delegated to another. We're not in the business of delegating work, Brother Cogdell. The question is simple, just for a moment, and then I'll be through with you. The question is just simply this. May this church, in discharging its obligation under the Great Commission, may it participate with a sister congregation in so doing? As, for example, in the tent work right here. He has taken the position, of course, that practice is sinful and wrong. I don't believe it is. I believe that it's exactly in harmony with our chart 56. He says now, I'm going to show you that that's not parallel, and that covers the charts now that he has introduced. I've shown you here that we do not have a sponsoring church eldership. We have down there a local church. It is they're all independent, they're all autonomous, they're all equal, they're all sufficient. They're all doing their duty under the Great Commission. These churches are preaching the gospel through that medium. All that Highland oversees is the radio program, or as it may be the television program. There is no delegation of authority, no delegation of oversight, no attempt on the part of one church to do the work of another, any more than there was in the tent farm business that was conducted here a few years ago. Same principle exactly. All right, let's have chart 18. I'm glad you called our attention to it. Chart 18. And I might say that he said on last evening that the work at Highland was the exclusive work of Highland, only the production of the program. It was no more the exclusive work of Highland than the putting on of the radio program. The Bible study program was the exclusive work of this congregation, one of the elders of which was the treasurer. All right, now this we answered in principle. Let's call your attention to the fact that he points out that the Herald of Truth has its own treasury. Well, does that make it sinful? Is it wrong for a congregation to have a fund that's kept together in one place and another fund in another, where a portion of its money is delegated to a certain purpose by its own self? Well, what possible wrong could be in that? It says it has its own name. It has the name of a radio program. You had a Bible study program here. I don't know what you call your present program. Whatever it is, doesn't involve an unscriptural name. Has its own mailing permit. I know some congregations that has one mailing permit for their bulletin, and the church has another mailing permit, or maybe a mailing permit for a different class of literature that's sent out. What's wrong with that? Does that make it wrong? He points out that it has its own offices. Well, but if you got so much mail for your local radio program here that was paid for by this congregation here, would it be sinful for you to have an office back there somewhere where you had somebody back there answering the questions? Would that make it wrong? Just how ridiculous can you get in opposing a thing anyway? It has its own payroll. Well, does that within itself make it wrong? If we eliminated any one or all of these items here, would that make it right, Cardinal? That's not what you oppose. All right. Has its own contracts. Well, so far as that is concerned, it's the Highland Church that makes the contract with these. It's not the Herald of Truth. He's leaving the impression with you that the Herald of Truth is an organization apart from the Highland Elders. That's not so. Now, whether I don't charge that he intended to convey a false impression there, I'm just saying that if that was the impression that you received, then you have a wrong impression there. That's not true. There is nothing different. Now, that covers it. There isn't anything about it. He attempts to make you think that there is something separate from and apart from the church. He may imply here that these churches have sent money to Highland, and then Highland in turn contributes to the Herald of Truth. Well, that's correct. It's also true that churches help Broadway in some of her work, and Broadway contributes to the Herald of Truth, and that the Union Avenue Church perhaps has at some time or other had programs that it received help on, and it too contributes. We have apostolic example of that. In Acts 11, we have an account of where, in Acts 11, 27 to 30, where they were sending money to Jerusalem, and at the same time, or near the same time, Jerusalem was sending out preachers to Antioch and Syria and Cilicia and so on. Now, there's an instance where a church was receiving money from one church and sending help to another church. Now, that certainly is right, and there's no objection to it. Now, that, friends, covers his speech item by item, statement by statement. If this man raised a question that I didn't answer, if he made an argument that I haven't examined, then I fail to get it. If there is anything, Brother Caldwell, that I haven't noticed that you think deserves it, if you'll stand up, I'll give you half a minute of my time. Stand up and state it. Now, what is it? If there's anything that I haven't dealt with, stand up and state it. Well, now, don't get up here and tell this audience when my speech is over that you raise questions that I didn't answer. But now let me have the chart. Can one church send the New Testament to another church? I want to know the answer to this question, Cardinal. You won't answer it tonight. We'd like to know by tomorrow night. Let's have the lights out, please. I'm going to run through these charts just briefly to impress upon you the arguments made. Because Brother Cogdill has no intention of trying to deal with him. Now, he may make some effort at the close tonight, but we'll be here again tomorrow night. Does Cogdill say this is scripture? Why can't I get an answer to that? Is it, Brother Cogdill, that it is so disastrous to your position that you're just simply afraid to answer? Is it that you lack courage? Is it that your position won't allow you to? Do any of you other brethren know what he could say about it? If so, whisper to him and tell him. I'm willing for you to help him on it. All right, now, let's have chart number 67. All right. We'll just review what we've already presented. Chart 67, the Great Commission. Now, this merited no attention from him whatsoever. He said, well, I'm not going to put these up here because, he said, I don't have their numbers. The numbers are available. This is number 67. I've had to call them out in order for these brethren to know what to get. 67 is that one. You're not interested in these charts, Brother Cogdill. You don't have any intention of answering them to begin with. All right, now here. I showed the obligation. There's an obligation that's upon the church. This obligation extends to all the world, to every nation, to every city, every person. I pointed out to you that that necessitates cooperation. Whenever you brethren start writing this up, you remember to tell the people how many of these arguments Cogdill answered. You remember to tell them how readily answered the question. You be sure to tell them how much we found out about whether one church could send a New Testament to another church. Be sure and tell us that. It makes interesting reading. Number 67A. Now, this is exactly what we're doing here. We've shown the obligation is set forth by the Great Commission, Matthew 28:18-20, Mark 16:15-16. Churches cooperating. May sister congregations participating in the same work of preaching the gospel do so when one of them takes care of the details. Here in this instance, it happens to be the Highland Church that takes care of the details of arranging the radio network programs. The program is to preach the gospel to carry it to the whole world. In discharge of the obligation of the Great Commission. Let's have chart number 66. We'll skip 69 because the time is running out. That's just merely showing types of cooperation. The various kinds, individual, church, and so on. Now here is the proof of my proposition. He said, I offer no proof of it. Here's the proof of it. Cogdill, take a look at it. Am I in the way? Richard will change seats with you over here for a moment if you want to get over there where you can see it. I'd like for you to take a look at it. That's my proof. It's the obligation of the church to preach the gospel. That's set out in the Great Commission. Do you deny that? No. He admits that. It is the obligation, and this obligation allows expediency in means and method. Do you deny that? Is that wrong? What are these means? Speaking, writing. Well, you can speak and write. We have an example of both in the New Testament. Better let him alone, Brother Puckett. Let him answer. Let him listen so he can hear this.
You go on ready to speak, Brother.
Well, Brother Cogdill, you're not... That shows you don't intend to answer this, doesn't it? You don't have the least idea of even attempting to do so. I'm going to say what I please because that's what I please to say. But it just happens that you don't intend to make any effort to answer this. Now, brethren, we're all going to the judgment one of these days. And some of these times we're going to have to answer for these very matters. I don't see how you can justify yourselves before this congregation in such a callous disregard of a responsibility of a man in the negative of this proposition. I don't see how you justify it. The obligation allows expediency in means and methods. Speaking, writing, tracts, radio, television. These are means, methods. We have example of tracts. We have example in the New Testament. At least we have an example of an inspired tract. Colossians 4:16. Read the letter from the church in Laodicea and so on. There's an example. One church sending it to another. Then thirdly, a church may undertake a work larger than it can support. Do you deny that? Now listen, friends, I prove that by chart 56. A church may undertake a work larger than it can support and may be assisted by sister congregations. That's chart 56. Let's head. Here we have the total need. This is it. That's all Jerusalem could do. But with these churches participating, they were able to meet the total need. Now let the green section down there represent what Highland could do without the help of any other church. Let the rest of it represent the total possibility that faces us today. Let this represent the contributing churches. Why can't they, as did these, all combine their efforts, as did these combine their efforts, and discharge their obligation? They did. Why can't we? We can. These brethren deny it. And the way that he denies it is, he's got a ridiculous position that the church can't help another church in evangelism, which means one church can't send a New Testament to another church. That, friends, is it. Let's get back now to chart 66. All right? Chart 66. Now here. We've seen that one that is an obligation. The obligation allows expediency. The church may undertake a work larger than it can support and be assisted. Thus, one church may send assistance to another church in the form of preaching, in the form of benevolence, and we've given the references repeatedly. This assistance may consist of food, money, clothing, a preacher. Now, friends, these are the essential requirements. If you admit this, you can't deny the conclusion. But you can't deny that because that's what the Bible teaches. So let's have the proposition. 54. Chart 54. Now, the major premise, all total situations, the component parts of which are scriptural, are total situations which are scriptural. The total situation described in my proposition is a total situation, the component parts of which are scriptural. Therefore, the total situation described in my proposition is a total situation which is scriptural. I have sustained that proposition. I have proved it with the Bible. It stands untouched, not even an effort made to touch it. Regardless of all the bombast and bluster that this man may make tonight, that proposition is like the Rock of Gibraltar. It can't be answered. It never has been. It never will be, because it's the truth of God's Word. And I hope, friends, that you will not allow yourselves to be deceived or deluded by those who would turn the church into a second-rate hobby sick, because that's exactly what they're trying to do. And they won't succeed. In the words of another whom this man has worked with in times past, they shall not pass.
Brethren moderators, Brother Wood, ladies and gentlemen, if you would disregard everything that's been said in the three or the seven speeches that have already been made on this proposition, and listen to the assertion made by Brother Woods in the last 10 minutes of the speech when he ran out of soap and had to review what he had said and abuse my moderator for whispering something to me, chide Brother Puckett about trying to help me. I'd be glad to accept all the help Brother Puckett's able to give me, and he's able to give plenty to anybody. But all of that shows just how desperate a man is. He got to the point where all he could do was put back up here the charts that he had shown before and just review. Well, it isn't quite time for review yet. If you've got any more argument, guy, you ought to make it. The review will come tomorrow night. You know, when he was talking about the things that he had proved, all he had to make about that was assertions. Get me that syllogistic chart back up here, Brother Weaver. I want to see what he says he proved. Let the audience look at it again. I want you to be the judge individually, honestly, within your own heart as to whether or not he's proved. His minor premise is the total situation described in my proposition is a total situation, the component parts of which are scriptural. Now, that's an assertion. What is one of the component parts? That when a church assumes a work, it becomes exclusively the work of the church which assumes it. Now, you haven't proven anything that begins to look like that. Then another component part of this minor premise is that a church may assume a work that it is unable to discharge. He didn't establish that, he just asserted it. There isn't anything in the New Testament that teaches it either. Specific or generic. Another one of his minor premises in it is that when a church assumes to do a work, it changes the relationship of other churches to that work. Now, Guy, you know enough law, and you know enough principles of morality and righteousness, and you know enough about the teaching of the New Testament to know that one man assuming anything can't change another man's relationship, morally, spiritually, financially, or otherwise, legally or in any other way, toward any kind of a situation. You can assume anything you please, and you can't change Roy Cogdell's relationship to anything, morally, legally, or spiritually. And that's just another assertion. All of this assertion business is to cover up the fact that he hasn't dealt with the issues in this proposition. I've asked him repeatedly, where did one church ever send money to another church for the purpose of preaching the gospel? I'm still crying for that passage. His proposition's crying for it. That's what it needs to prove. He's argued that if it can do this, then it can do that. And if this is so, then that's so. And if Cogdell did this, then this must be so. And his arguments have run that way through all of the speeches that he's made now, and he's made four on this proposition in the affirmative. And you know, the idea of debating is rather peculiar. He said the other night that in the negative, he wasn't obligated to prove anything. But he wants to put the burden of proof on me when I'm in the negative. You know, he just wants to fix the thing like it suits Guy Woods to fix it. He wants to debate his own way, and he wants you to debate his way. And it'd suit him fine if I'd do that. But I just don't happen to like his way of doing so far as I'm concerned and my procedure, and I'm going to do it my way. And my way is to take the foundation out from under every assertion and out from under every argument that he can make without following the trail that he winds around in. And the foundation of his proposition is one congregation sending money to another congregation to give it the opportunity of doing a bigger work than that church itself could do. The concentration, the centralizing of funds, the combining, the pooling of funds. He can't even find the pooling of funds among the churches of the New Testament to save his life. Where did the churches in any kind of an endeavor pool their funds? They contributed to a church in need. They helped a church in need meet the needs of its members. Where did they ever pool their funds in order to do it, Brother Woods? Now you find the scriptural proof. You can't prove that a congregation or that congregations in the New Testament ever jointly put their money together to accomplish anything. They contributed. Concurrently, they helped the Jerusalem church meet the needs of its members. But they did not pool their resources in the hands of one eldership to do a work for which that congregation receiving the money was no more obligated than any other church. Was the Jerusalem church any more obligated to take care of its needy saints than any other congregation? Was it or not, Brother Woods? Was the Jerusalem church under any greater obligation to meet the needs of its own destitute than any other church? Was it? Yes, sir. It was the obligation of the Jerusalem church to meet the needs. They had the oversight of that work because it was their obligation. Now, you tell me that it's the obligation of the Highland Church to assume the oversight. And Jerusalem didn't assume. You just look at the difference. Jerusalem number one was in need. Jerusalem number two, the oversight belonged to them. Jerusalem number three, the obligation to fill that need was inherent in the Jerusalem church. It was their obligation. Jerusalem number four was unable to fulfill its own obligation. And none of them are true of Highland. Highland isn't in need. It's able to do its own work. It sends its own money out to help others do their work. In the next place, the obligation or the oversight did not belong to Highland. They assumed it. They assumed it. Just took it over on their own authority and on their own free will. It wasn't inherently theirs. They didn't even born this herald of truth. It was born by some promoters deluxe and put into their laps. They accepted it. They assumed it. It wasn't inherently theirs. The obligation was willfully created upon their part. It was not an obligation that was inherent upon them. Then he wants to get up here and palm off on you that the Jerusalem church and the aid that was sent in the great contribution in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 and 1 Corinthians 16 to the Jerusalem church is an example in the New Testament of what Highland's doing. Now, friends, that's the kind of proof he's offering. That's the kind of proof he's offered. There isn't any parallel between Jerusalem. Why the Highland Church is not in need. They're able to do their own work. They assume the oversight of it. They willfully created the obligation, and they pay their agents. Just like Brother Collier to travel all over this country and beg money from churches and individuals. Now, where'd the Jerusalem Church ever do that? There isn't any parallel whatever. He goes to Antioch, Acts 11, and I'd like to have the chart up here, brethren, on the Antioch church. How they did it. First of all, get me number 14 here, and then we'll look at the Antioch church. In this Jerusalem contribution, we have an example, and you know he says that there isn't any example in the New Testament of churches sending to church. Well, he goes here and he goes there. He wants to prove one element by one passage and another element by another passage and another element by another passage. But he wants me to find an example of a church sending to a church all in the same passage. Now, I'll tell you what I can find. I can find an example of churches sending, or the church sending to churches, or rather of disciples sending to churches according to his admission. And I can find an example of church is sending, he says, to disciples. That's great. This is an example of church is sending. That's how they said it in the New Testament. That he won't deny that. He's already admitted it. This is how they say it. How did churches say it? Every one of them raised its own money. 1 Corinthians 16:1-2. Every one of them selected its own messages. 2 Corinthians 8:9. I can prove that for Brother Wood. So all the churches raised their own money, every one of these congregations, all of them selected their own messengers, entrusted their own messengers with their own contribution, and they brought it to Jerusalem. Now I know this is churches sending. Paul said, as I gave order unto the churches of Galatia, so also do ye. Churches. He can't deny that. Here's an example of how churches send. Now then, just like we prove faith, repentance, confession, and baptism, give me the chart over here concerning how churches are received, and we'll just get both constituent elements of the proposition that I'm defending, the position I'm defending. We're going to get the constituent elements put together here, and when we do, we'll have the truth on it. Look at it now. Let me have this long point. Here your proposition is, his idea is, that Antioch sent to Jerusalem. The Bible doesn't say that. It doesn't say that. The Bible doesn't say that Jerusalem became the agent for the Antioch church. Are you taking the position, Brother Wood? Did you intend to take the position that the Jerusalem elders have the oversight of a program of benevolence among all the churches in Judea? The churches in Judea which are in Christ, more than one congregation among the brethren in Judea, the elders to whom they delivered the funds were among the brethren. Where were the brethren? In Judea, not in Jerusalem. Doesn't say a word in the world about elders in Jerusalem. Doesn't say anything about the church in Jerusalem. You have to assume that the church in Jerusalem in Acts 11 was in need, and that it was one of the ones that was in need. But if it was one, it is just one. Would you endorse the elders of Jerusalem taking over the oversight of a program of benevolence among the members down at Joppa, or over at Ennius, or Lydda, or up at Bethany? Do you believe that the elders of one congregation, you said you wouldn't try to defend the idea of elders overseeing the work of another church? Well, then why do you keep on talking about Antioch working through the elders of Jerusalem and doing this work? That's what you say. You said Jerusalem was an agent, a church that was an agency for Antioch. I deny it. It isn't so. How did they do it? They made up the money. Just grant now that it wasn't a church in Antioch. Grant his contention, and it's a quibble, that they did it as individual disciples. Just give him that point. How did the churches that received it receive it? That's what I want to know. You've got an example here. When Paul and Barnabas, the messengers of the disciples at Antioch, brought their aid down to the brethren in Judea, to whom did they deliver it? They put it into the hands of the elders. Now that's the way the church is received. I know how the churches received. But listen to me. Every one of those churches were needy churches. Every one of them. There was a famine, and they were in need. And because they were in need, the disciples sent. Not to satisfy their ambition to do some great work, or to carry on a brotherhood-wide program for all the churches. That's what these things are. Every one of these big promotions are brotherhood programs. They're doing the work of many churches, whether they admit it or not. They take the oversight of the work and argue that these churches that contribute their money fulfill their obligation to the Great Commission just by contributing their money. And Highland fulfills its obligation by oversight. What did he say about that in his last speech? when he bantered me and bantered the audience and argued with me and argued with you.
What haven't I answered? Well, that's one thing you didn't even mention. That's one thing you didn't even mention. You didn't say one word in the world about that.
And this audience knows that you didn't. We need in all of these matters to do a little thinking for ourselves along the line. Here's the way the New Testament did it. The New Testament teaches us that these brethren made their own money up. They selected their own messenger. And they sent by their messenger to the elders of the church that was in need. And the elders distributed that contribution, and Brother Wood says they can't do that. Give me the one on the pattern now. On 1 Corinthians chapter 16, he says, Cogdill thinks that the church out of its treasury, made up by the contribution on the first day of the week, can support a preacher. Well, just get your constituent elements again there. You brethren like that so much, we'll just feed you out of that spoon. Your constituent elements are that each church made up its own money, its own resources, by the contribution of its members on the first day of the week. That's how they raised money. That's how the money was raised. And then he wants to know, out of that treasury, did they support preaching? Well, they supported preaching out of some treasury. If it wasn't that one, you tell me which one it was. 1 Corinthians 16 shows how they raised the money on the first day of the week. And many passages show you how they used that money in the matter of... And you prove it just like you prove baptism. There are passages just like Jackson uses that prove faith and passages that prove baptism. There are passages that prove the necessity of faith that don't mention baptism and passages that prove the necessity of baptism that don't mention faith. And he said, I made a Baptist argument if I did Roy Deaver did. He used it in the Hathaway. That's where I got it. That's what I was reading from. I added a point or two to it. That wasn't in the argument that he made, but the plan of salvation showing the proper elements in it and the proper order of it, establishing the whole story of what to do to be saved. Now mix the elements up and you don't get the same result. Add elements to it and you don't get the same result. So you've got to have your elements right and you've got to have your equation right in order to get the right conclusion. Well, here you have how the church spent its money. We know how it raised it. It sent to the preacher. Not to the church, but to the preacher. It sent direct to Paul. That's the pattern of evangelism, and I can prove that by Guy Wood. I read it from him last night, didn't I, in the annual lesson commentary. He said that's the way it was done then. That's the way it ought to be done now. That's exactly what I say. That's exactly what I say. And then again, here's the pattern for the benevolence. When Philippi sent to Jerusalem, they sent to the church in the... To the church in need. And we learn from Acts 11 that when they sent to a church in need, they sent it to the elders of the church that was in need. And in the absence of any contention or any information to the contrary, we'd presume that's exactly the way Jerusalem received it. But whether they did or not, here's the way the church did it. They made up their own contribution. By the contribution or the contributing of their members on the first day of the week. Now, if they didn't do it that way, what other way did they do it? And if they didn't send the Paul out of the contribution on the first day of the week and the Lord's Day money or the congregational treasury, if there was any money raised any other way, how did they do it? That's the only pattern I know, and he agreed with that. He said that's the way they raised their money. Well, all right, that's what we prove by that. Now, Cogdill doesn't prove anything by 1 Corinthians 16 with reference to this proposition, except that's the way they raised their money. Did I understand you to say you agreed with that? Or did I misunderstand? I understood you to say you agreed that that is the way they raised their money. Well, that's all on earth I'm contending for from 1 Corinthians 16. But that doesn't show how they spent it. How each church spent its money, it shows one thing they raised money for, but there are other passages that show other things that the church had to raise money for. They spent it, and if they spent it, they had to raise it. But I'll tell you what you can't find. You can't find where any church ever sent its paid agents out to get their hands in the treasuries of other churches and promote other churches out of money with which to do the work. Now, that's what you need, guy. Why don't you discuss the proposition? I can't get him on this proposition any more than I could on the other. And he's in the affirmation now. He's affirming this time, and he still won't debate.
Let me see. I want another chart here right quickly. Let's get right back over here to this. The whole is equal to the sum of its parts. Now, he said God liked that proposition. He likes this argument. Well, I'm just feeding you out of the spoon that you are contending for. You ought to like it. And you've used it. And he said now, in reply, you notice how he replied to this chart? You notice how he tried to deal with it? Why, he said, we're not contending that the church delegates its work to another church. Well, why can't it? You're contending that it can delegate its resources. Sure you are. That's your contention. You're saying that the elders of the congregation have the oversight of the work of that church. Nobody's denying that. You spent a whole lot of time and wasted a lot of time proving it, and everybody accepts that. Of course, the church is under the supervision of the elders. But what are the constituent elements of that oversight? What are they? What do the elders oversee? I can prove to him that the elders oversee the resources as well as the work. I'll read that out of this annual lesson commentary. It's an amazing thing that you find him committed on so many of these points in these lessons that he wrote back in 1946. I can read right out of there the proposition that the elders are over, they have the oversight of the resources. Of whose resources? The resources of the church where they're elders. Well, are they responsible just for the raising of it or the distribution of it? Are they responsible just for the money or for the work that the money does? When an elder or when the elders of the congregation contribute their resources to the elders of another church, and let that church hire any preacher they please, and let that church put it over any station that they want to put it over. And by the way, while I'm on it, about 60% of the stations that they put it over is a duplication. A duplication. He talks like they're doing a lot of mission work with the Herald of Truth. Friends, let me tell you something. You get the list of their radio stations, and the biggest end of the money that they're spending even for time on radio and TV is right down here in the country where the churches of Christ are the strongest. That's so. You just check on it and see if it isn't so for yourself. I checked it up one time, and 60% of the stations were in places like Nashville and Memphis and Birmingham and Dallas and Fort Worth, where their missionary work isn't needed, where the churches are abundantly able and all over this country, where churches are carrying on a radio program, they come in and spend money preaching the gospel, where a good job is already being done. Why don't they get out yonder somewhere and preach it where it isn't being heard? I'll tell you why. They've got to keep the thing promoted. So a whole lot of the money that they spend for preaching over the radio is spent purely for promotional purposes, to keep the churches in touch with it and excited about it. What? 10? Thank you. The elders not only have the oversight of the resources of the church, but the members. The argument on this chart, and he didn't touch it. He didn't even begin to touch it. The argument was that if the eldership can contribute a part of their resources, they can contribute all of it with the same passage. If they can contribute all of their resources, they can give the oversight of their members over here. And they can lead their worship. Would you agree for the worship program of the various churches of Christ to be overseen under the oversight of the sponsoring elders of Highland Church? Would you? Would you agree for them to turn their discipline over to the sponsorship of the Highland Church? Would you agree for them to turn the oversight and the responsibility of their members over to Highland Church? And if they turn any of this which belongs to the congregation where they are elders, how much of their independence and autonomy and equality and sufficiency do they still have? How much of it do they still have? If it takes the whole, he not only believes that the whole is equal to the sum of its parts, but he believes that you can give some of those parts away and still have the whole. That's what his proposition proved. Why, this very thing right here. Not only is the whole equal to the sum of its parts, but do away with some of the parts and you still have the whole left. Now, that's what he's got to prove. That chart right there proves. And it's ungetoverable, as he'd say, and he hasn't answered it. He hasn't tried to answer it. He gets up here and makes some little remark about it and say, that does away with that. Well, the wish is mother of the fault. He's not going to get away from that chart before this debate's over. Just watch it now and see. And then I want to come on over here to this next one, which we introduced last night. He had very little to say about this. Here are churches sending to churches. These churches are all sponsoring churches. They receive money from many other churches. You know, we've got this thing spinning so fast now that we're swapping dollars all over the country. This church will send to that one, and that one will send back to this. It's an amazing thing that's going on. But here our sponsoring church is receiving money from church. This church right here carries on by their own admission. A brotherhood program of caring for old people. Soliciting money from churches all over the whole brotherhood, and by their own admission, and I've got it in their announcement about it, they say it's a brotherhood orphan home. Under the elders of the central church. Carrying, or rather an old folks home, carrying on a brotherhood program of relieving the aged. They're sponsoring church. Here's another sponsoring church. They receive money from all over everywhere. And here's another one. They receive money from all over everywhere. And another one. That if it doesn't now, has in the past sponsored a program of evangelism for as many churches as they could get to send the money. These sponsoring churches are receiving money from churches. And yet they're sending money, if not the same dollar one in the place of it. They're sending money over here to the Highland Church, the papa sponsor of them all. And when they send it to Highland, they put the money of many churches. Not only the sponsoring church's money, but the contributing church's money into the hands over here of and into a brotherhood treasury. It isn't the treasury of the Highland Church. The financial statement shows that, doesn't it? This isn't an operating statement of the Highland Church. It's an operating statement of the Herald of Truth. An operating statement of the Herald of Truth. Not the Highland Church. And the operating statement shows that they have their own treasury, that they have their own work, and he says it's the work of many churches. I don't have to prove that. He admitted it. That every church, and you read letters down at Birmingham, that we're fulfilling our obligation under the Great Commission by sending our money to the elders at Highland. And you know, I told you last night that he had tried to prove, and he did buy his charts on the Great Commission. By his charts on the Great Commission, I can prove the missionary society by the same kind of logic, and just as easily as he can prove the Herald of Truth. If it'll prove one, it'll prove the other. That here's an obligation to go into the whole wide world, and no one congregation is able to do it. It started with one guy. It started with one in the New Testament day. With only one to begin with. The Lord didn't establish churches at the same time, simultaneously, in many different places and let them cooperate in order to preach the gospel of the world. It started with a group in Jerusalem and carried the gospel into the whole wide world. Your program of world evangelization began with one church, but he says no one congregation's able to do it. Therefore, we got to have something bigger than just one congregation. And I told you that in this proposition also, he'd deny the all-sufficiency of God's organization. It can't do benevolent work. It cannot do even its own relieving. It cannot preach the gospel as it needs to be preached. You've got to have something bigger than the local church. That's what his arguments amount to. And then he has the audacity to get up here and tell you that he believes in the all-sufficiency of the church. If you do, you don't believe your proposition or your argument either. You can't believe both unless you can believe the contradiction. Not only is it the work of many churches, it's all overseen for many elders. For many elders. That is, the elders at Highland sustain the same relationship to every contributing church, but they sustain the Highland insofar as the Herald of Truth is concerned. And I want you to get that. And don't misunderstand. The elders of the Highland Church have the same obligation in the Herald of Truth to every contributing church that sends money to it that they do to the Highland Church insofar as the Herald of Truth is concerned. The same obligation sustained, the same relationship. They're under just as much obligation to use this money to the very best of their ability and honestly for the purpose for which it was given. They're under just as much obligation to do that here in this contributing church as they are to the Highland Church of which they're members. He said, oh, they as elders, they have the oversight of it. Well, that doesn't prove it's the Highland Church. He says, Brother Cogdell says that it's apart from the elders. I didn't say that. I'm well aware of the fact that the elders of the Highland Church are over the Herald of Truth. But go back to your illustration. They're not only over the Herald of Truth, they're over the Highland Church. And they could be over the Highland Church and over the First National Bank, too. The same men. The proposition is that this is not their work as elders of the Highland Church. It couldn't be in any way on earth. Because it's a brotherhood treasury and a brotherhood work. And they become brotherhood elders. And I repeat, it's a perversion
of the function of God's divine organization. They don't think God's organization is big enough to do what God wants it to do, so they've got to pervert it in order to claim that they're scriptural. And it's the old idea that you can promote anything under heaven and go stick it under an eldership somewhere, and that makes it scriptural. Well, the eldership may be scriptural otherwise, but you can't put a brotherhood program under an eldership and make it scriptural, and that's what you're trying to do. Not only that, but it has its own treasure.
Well, he said, what's it does? Well, that just proves it's not the treasure of the Highland Church. That's what it proves.
Well, it has its own name. Well, what if it does?
That just proves that it's not the Highland Church.
It has its own mailing permit.
That just proves that it isn't the mailing permit of the Highland Church. It's something apart from it.
It has its own offices. That just proves that it isn't run in the offices of the Highland Church. It's apart from it. And they pay that on. It has its own payroll, its own employees. And that just proves that they're not doing the work of the Highland Church. They're doing the work of the Herald of Truth. It puts out its own financial statement. Its own financial statement. And don't you forget that only 43 8/10%. And remember that leaves $20,000 unaccounted for. Why, there are gigantic sums of money involved in this. Film production, $172,948 a year. That ought to reach 1 million people with something. It ought to reach 1 million people with something. Then there's the proposition down here of postage, printing, check, travel, fees, and publicity. $64,548 a year. And it leaves $20,000 unaccounted for. Their operating statement does. I'm not accusing anybody of dishonesty, and don't you accuse me of it. I'm saying that there are $20,000 here still that are not accounted for, in addition to these vast sums. And it takes 90 cents out of every dollar of the Missionary Society to get the other dime. Where's our dollar and dime, church? To get the dime to the mission field. And we've made that argument, and I expect Guy Woods has made it, against the Missionary Society. Brethren have all over the country, all through the years, and it's a legitimate one. Because whenever you set up anything that the Lord has not authorized, any kind of a program or plan that God in the New Testament has not taught, and waste the Lord's money in furthering your own ambitions and carrying out your own desires, you are perverting the resources and prostituting the resources of the Lord's church.
Sure does run off in a hurry.
My brethren, I'm certain that we all have answered.
Dear Mr. Woods,
I should just like to say that this will be the last night that Brother Warren and Brother Deaver can be with us. They're over from Fort Worth, Texas. They have their local work to take care of, and they were unable to come but for the 5 nights, since they have to be back in Fort Worth for their regular work. I just wanted to express my appreciation tonight to them for the invaluable aid that they've given me as moderator and operator of the projector, as well as in many other ways. And on tomorrow evening, Brother Alan Hires, the regular preacher for the Get Well congregation in Memphis, will serve as moderator, and Brother Albert Hill and Brother Richard England will operate the projector. I thought that an announcement to that end would be due you tonight. May I again express my appreciation to these brethren for their coming from Fort Worth to assist us in this effort. Thank you.
Let's remember the admonition after we're dismissed, that we shall, of course, leave all the debating to these brethren, whom we all recognize to be entirely capable to present the evidence for what they believe to be the truth. I have this announcement handed to me by Brother Adams. For those who ordered prints of the charts on Wednesday night, please pick them up at the front.
The children that have left there, who are old enough and did graduate from high school, all but three obeyed the gospel before they left there. And two of those went back and were baptized at Bowles' home. The first gospel sermon preached over a nationwide broadcast was preached by a boy from Bowles' home. The first gospel sermon that was preached in Germany after the war was preached by a boy from Bowles' home. These homes are turning out many Christian men and women, I think.